it's tough to kind of promote yourself. You know, you want your, we both come from sports where it's more of a meritocracy. Like if you play a good game, you're going to hear about it. But if you write a good record and you don't talk about it, no one gives a shit. So it's hard to kind of learn to, you don't want to be boastful. You don't want to be, you want to be humble, but at the same time, you want to flex. You need to flex or else you'll die.
All right. Hello, everybody, and Happy New Year. Happy New Year. I know it's weird. It's February 1st, but it's the first episode of 2023 from the Release Day Series podcast. So I got to wish you a Happy New Year. I hope it's off to a great start. You got great things planned. I know that I'm still trying to sort that out myself, but that's not for here. I'm so glad to be back with a new conversation, the last conversation that I had in 2022, and that is with an incredible rock and roll duo based out of Montreal known as the Flamingos Pink. And I discovered them in 2020 from their album Out of Controller, and Jules and Sash, the duo that make up the Flamingos Pink, bring such a great energy and such heaviness to their sound. You can't even believe that it is just the two of them making up this band, because it is just an absolute thrill ride every time you listen to their music. So glad I discovered them. So glad they released a new album last year on September 2nd, 2022. They dropped their sophomore album, Free Living, and that is what they're here to talk about today. We're going to talk about how they met and started making music together. Jules actually talks about this craziness of that they lead parallel lives almost. He's going to tell that story. It's absolutely insane. And how they weathered the last 2 years of the pandemic in the music industry and fought for their independence in doing so. And of course, what the title of the album and title track of the album, Free Living, means to them. So I'm so excited to bring this conversation to you as the first one of 2023. Remember, you can go to our website, releasedayseries.com, and check out our limited video series as well as all the other podcast episodes. Don't forget to subscribe wherever it is that you're listening. Check us out on YouTube. We also have the video episodes there as well. And, you know, sign up for the newsletter and get a really great goodie that comes along with that. So, broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Williams Treaty's First Nations, the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabek, the Chippewa, Haudenosaunee, Wendat, Inuit, and Métis peoples, this is my conversation with Jules and Sash of the Flamingos Pink. Sash, Jules, the Flamingos Pink, welcome to the Release Day Series podcast. I've been following you guys since the release of Out of Controller in 2020. And I know that was just the previous album to Free Living, but man, it is a blast watching you guys on social media, listening to your music. What's the history of you guys? Like, you guys look like you have a ton of fun doing everything that you do. Can you just give me the history and the origin story of the Flamingos Pink?
Well, we want to take a second and say we are celebrating the second year of Out of Controller this week. I think it was just a couple of days ago that was released. 2 years ago. And just to be able to look at that and say, wow, have things changed? You know, 2 years ago's reality versus today's reality is just, it's not the same. So it's nice to see that evolution, you know?
I bet. And just for those listening, that's Julian talking, the drummer of the duo. And I totally agree with that. You know what I love, though, very much is that, like, you guys have a sound. Like, you guys have, like, when I put it on, I know it's the Flamingos Pink. And I know that you guys have sort of cited some, you know, in your press or, you know, in your EPK, you got to kind of give some of those familiarities to the Strokes or the Hives or things like that. To me, you guys are the Flamingos Pink. And I remember that listening to like a Zane Lowe interview with the Black Keys, and the, I can never remember the drummer of that band, but
Patrick Carney,
that's right. Yeah, he was like, yeah, you know, we just been working on a sound and nobody can really recognize the drummer's sound, and you know, but you can recognize the Black Keys sound, you can recognize mm-hmm. the Flamingos Pink sound. When did that start for you guys? How did you guys get working together to build the ethos of the Flamingos Pink?
Well, first of all, that's a cool compliment, you know, to hear that somebody can, you know, sort of get a sound off of you, and it's not like, oh, is this like, you know, any other bands? Like, I don't know, it's the Flamingos Pink, like whatever. But so thank you for that. But in terms of building our sound, I guess it's just happened naturally through playing, through writing, through recording. It's all sort of come together that way. You know, we try to, you know, everything starts from, you know, usually a riff or a chord progression, and then we sort of jam that out. And I guess that's how, you know, we've kind of come to having that sort of sound. You know,
I think both of us have almost like a run and gun type of offense where it comes naturally, and then we build on it quickly, and you try to keep the magic from you try to keep the initial magic and why it made it interesting in the first place. And I think also having been a band for more time than not, in a pandemic setting, it really pushed our way of doing things to an extreme, because a la base, like initially we're very minimalist in what we do. It's, you know, it's just both of us in the band. And because I think the chemistry from the get-go was always palpable, you know, our first, we played in a band together before called Black Bambi, and it was the two, both of us and a friend of ours who was a bass player. There was clear chemistry between the both of us. And when we started, just Sash came with a song, actually this is where I live. And we didn't have a jam space at the time. And I set up my drums and Sash brought his guitar, and we just played a song. And it's almost as if that song always existed.
And then I think another big thing, especially being in a duo, the two of you is trust, right? I mean, it's not a four piece, it's not a three piece. You don't have that one extra voice. Sometimes it can be too loud if you have too many people, but you know, it's just the two of you. Does it make it actually easier when it's just the two of you guys working on this stuff?
In some ways, yeah. In some ways, there's just two people. You know, it's like, are you, even just for practicing, you know, when you think about it, it's like, are you available? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's not like, okay, let me call Jimmy, let me call Kevin, let me call.
All right, get the jam space. Yeah, you know,
yo, let's fuck Kevin, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I swore.
Never jam.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
In a way, it does make it easier, and also just creatively as well. You know, because we, you know, it's more than just bandmates. You know, we have a very, you know, special kind of friendship, and so that chemistry, like you said, it does make it easier when you're two people on the same page and very open and honest with each other, to be able to be like, you know, either this is working or like this is not working, and leave your ego at the door and be like, you know, I trust what you're saying and you trust what I'm saying. And I think that ultimately is a strength for us, you know.
And it's not always easy either, because it's like when you're so intertwined as well, and we're friends but we're also bandmates, and you know, you need your independence, but you also need the synergy that comes from being almost symbiotic. But you know, that's a fine line to tread, because you need to keep a balance between all of those different hats. And I think that that's something that can be challenging, but it's also beautiful. I think the downside to being only two is sometimes I'm realizing now, but I think the pandemic had a lot to do with it. Sometimes you can feel like you're in an echo chamber. You're like, what I'm doing, do I like it because he likes it and he likes it because I like it and blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, you don't want to pigeonhole yourself. But again, we're back to the balance between both. And I think that especially Out of Controller was a special record, or a special way of making that record. And we fought for our independence both, I think, as individuals, but also as a band. Like, we broke up with our label, and we broke up with pretty much every contract that we had, but it was with one entity, because it was like, hey, if we can organize ourselves, we want to work with people, but we don't want to be held back either. And yeah, I think the band is actually more it's a way of life and a way of doing things. And I feel like we've achieved something now, whether one likes the songs or not, or whether you think like it really doesn't matter, because it's been such a cool process for us as musicians, but as individuals, that I'm just stoked to be able to do this with Sash, you know. And the more I explore Sash, the more I explore myself, and I think that our friendship draws people in as well, and you get to have discussions with people that you have no idea, you don't know them before the discussion, but you start talking, you're like, oh wow, we connect. You know, it's, if music isn't about making a connection with someone, I don't know what I'm doing here then, you know.
It's great. No, you could feel that chemistry, man. Yeah, you guys, like, there's something there. So you guys played in a band before this.
Not only do we have chemistry, but Sash and I have almost had parallel lives, in terms of we both went, how can I say this, so we're 7 years apart, and we went to the same high school, except never at the same time. So when Sash, I became a hall monitor when Sash started that school. So I was Sash's hall monitor when he was in seventh grade, and I was 19. So I knew him when he was 12 and I was 19. And then that job was great for when you played music, because and I was in university. So it's like, I was getting paid to study, and you kind of also, it's nice. You get to interact with kids and review how you were as a kid. And there's a lot of introspection there. And so I left that job and came back. And when I came back, Sash was a hall monitor as well. So we became friends there. And the thing is, we then discovered that we both went to the same, like, kindergarten and elementary school. And then, so we have the exact same, we went to the exact same schools, but just never at the same time. So the way the band started is, when we were both hall monitors, I was in charge of putting together a band for the kids. And I was like, the only way I'm doing this is if you let me do a band, like create a band with the hall monitors as well. And they were like, all right, cool. So I'm putting together this band. I'm like, you know, a scout, you know, just like, okay, who's doing this? And your fantasy rock and roll band. And, Sash, I didn't even know Sash was into music. Sash comes up to me with earphones, and he's like, oh, I know you're putting together a band, and I just wanted to let you know I can sing. And I'm like, cool. Okay. Yeah. And I put it on. Yeah, sweet. Okay. And I put it on, and it's a version, it's Sash's version of Elvis Presley.
You Are My Sunshine.
No, it was an Elvis Presley song. He sang
Jailhouse Rock,
but ripping it. And I'm just like,
nice.
No,
that's
way.
A good song. I was like, that's a good song to rip on for sure.
Absolutely.
If you can.
If you can, but he could. And at the time, man, I was in a band. I was in a psychedelic rock band where it's like just wanky guitar, and no one wanted to do vocals. And whoever did do vocals, it was like drenched in reverb. And here's the opposite. Here's someone who's like ripping it. You hear the chest, you know, you hear the lungs, and that's very similar to drums. It's primal. It's like you hear the air being moved. And I was like, whoa. So that was our first musical encounter.
Talk to me about Free Living, the themes behind it, you know, just what's the story behind the album and what people can expect to get out of it.
I think Free Living is the most honest piece of work that we've made, because we really focused on rhythm, melody, and storytelling. And the story, sometimes when you write, so we write together. Sash will bring ideas, I'll bring ideas, and we see how we relate to them. But I think this record specifically, as with everything that was going on with the pandemic, and I went, I became a father, you know, I think with the change and the fact that, like, our livelihood completely stopped, gigging stopped, our side job stopped, and it just became a bit overwhelming. I think Out of Controller, when you look at it, it's even just the title, it's like everything had come to a halt, but you're still spinning out of control and you're going like, okay, how do we regain our footing? And I'm saying this in retrospect, like I didn't, I'm realizing now, you know, and free living was, I think, our way of rallying back together and being like, I got you, you got me. Let's put our foot down and let's really dig into this for it was almost survival. You know, it was hard. I think going through just that evolution, and we've both had our struggles with not necessarily just substance abuse, but more addictive personalities. And when you try to be your own person and live freely, you have to ask yourself questions and you have to kind of be very self-aware. And that, I think, is what the record really, one of the main themes of that is really self-awareness and trying to be your own best friend in order to push yourself to be the best person that you can be. I think that that would be one of the main themes of that record.
That's awesome. Sash, anything you want to add to it? Or was that it? Was that Julian just nailed it?
Jules pretty much nailed it right on the head. But I mean, to add to that, I think that free living really, a lot of the themes and storytelling and ultimately the lyrics, a lot of it stemmed from conversations that we had, you know, about not necessarily about music at all. It was about, you know, just going through different things at different times and in your life. And, you know, I think for anybody, it's important to talk about it, whether it's good or bad or difficult or not. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have each other in that sense. And ultimately, I think free living, well, we were able to build that record off of that honesty and vulnerability between each other and, you know, grow from there, you know. And really it was kind of cathartic in a way to have those conversations, and really it is very introspective, and then dive into it musically and be able to express it in a different way than with just words, you know.
Yeah, well, it's definitely, again, it's the Flamingos Pink sound. You guys have a great way of accompanying lyrics and messaging with, you know, a full bodied sound. Or then you look at it, you start breaking it down like Covered in Roses is, which is acoustic, but then you still can't help, you know, near the end, still break it into a bit of a, you know, still breaking into the drums, still crashing into it. But yeah, I think Free Living, the title track and the first track off the album, sets it up perfectly. And I know that, sorry, you guys said, so Out of Controller was after you broke up with the label, right?
No,
you were still with the label then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, okay. And we broke up during that whole cycle.
Understood.
Which made it even more Out of Controller, but
yeah, totally. Well, because I was going to say, because I feel that, like, you feel that even again in that title, Free Living. How are you feeling with that Free Living? And I think it goes to kind of like thinking about that both ways a little bit, because I was always listening to it kind of rocking out, like I'm good, Free Living, like, you know, it's kind of a cool. Then if you kind of think about it, it's like, you know, almost relationship wise, like, how are you doing with that Free Living? How's it going for you? Right. That's sort of that alternate scenario. Right. And, you know, I think a lot of people can feel that way. And I think, you know, it also talks to that power of, you know, having somebody, you know, whether it's like you guys or somebody else in your life. And it's like, it's Free Living, but it's like, how is it going for you? Cause if you don't have, if you are free, how is it playing out? Is it playing out the way that you want it? Could it lead to the substance issues? Can it lead to, you know,
interesting. You really hit the nail on the head with that, because it's like, I think a lot of people talk about freedom and wanting to be free. But when you're free for real, it's really scary, because you don't know when your next paycheck is coming in. You have to be your own boss, your own coach, and you have to be the player in your own life. So you need to compartmentalize, but that's very overwhelming at times too. And it's not impossible, but it's like, it's definitely a challenge. And so knowing when to ask for help is super important. And then being able to ask for help when you need it is a whole other skill set. And that's super hard, because now we're back to the whole vulnerability thing. And trust and love. And then I don't care was that. I don't care is like can be interpreted as being like, I don't give a shit, but it's more like,
yeah,
I don't care if you're not ready to hear this. You need to hear this as your friend. You need to be checked and balanced right now. And that, you know,
or talking to yourself as well. I think the way, ultimately it depends on how you interpret it. And that's the cool thing about music, right? Is you can interpret it whichever way you want. But I think writing it, it was kind of a conversation with yourself in the mirror. I think there's a lot of the record that kind of revolves around that. And that was definitely a theme that stuck around my head. It's like, what do you say to yourself in the mirror at this point in time, you know, with what you're doing right now? And that kind of circles back to free living, where for me it was like, okay, you know, you're free right now and that's a great feeling, but how do you organize it so that you're really enjoying it as much as you can and ultimately happy as well? Because being free doesn't equal being happy necessarily.
Yeah.
And so how do you go about, okay, I have this freedom, now I want to be happy. How am I going to go from here to here?
Talking to yourself in the mirror, I agree. I think that's a huge part of, I think, the band as well. It's like, we're only two. We talk to ourselves, to each other, and to ourselves. But ultimately, it's like, I really believe that we're mirrors of each other, just as humans, and here to reflect what we see in one another. And spending so much time together, I want to reflect the beauty that I see in Sash. And I think that Sash helps reflect the beauty that I don't necessarily see in myself. And it's almost like you know, when they say, show me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are. And if you have friends that don't necessarily bring out the best in you, well, you're not that cool to be around, you know? And even if you think you're cool, you're kind of whack, you know? And at least I got your pretty face, which is the third track. I always saw it as you're talking to yourself. So, but we're talking to each other, you know, at least I got your pretty face. Like, you can always fall back on that, but it's not more of a sad song, but it's more like realizing, like, yo, if you keep going down this path, you're not going to make it.
Within the lyrics and what you guys are singing about, I feel like that also translate, like that raw, you know, like these truths, hard truths, these raw, real realizations feeds into the production of the album. And and the thing that I've always loved about listening to you guys, and, you know, I kind of sometimes find myself in the old man shaking fists at like the Clouds group, where I say, like, oh, you know, they don't make albums like that. You know, you don't, like, everybody's overproduced. Everything's overprocessed. You know, everybody's trying to get it perfect because you can. I don't feel like that with you guys. And I hope that's a compliment, because it is, like, it feels great to me when I can listen to an album such as, you know, any three of your records, where you feel really connected to the instrumentation of the music, the way that it's recorded. It feels close. It feels like Sash is playing, you know, singing in my ear, and Jules is drumming in my right ear. And you know, so I guess just to that end, you know, producing this, am I right in thinking it's off the floor, or like how real is all of the close is some of this? Because, like, there are some, and I, like, there are some, like, kind of, I don't know, I won't call them mistakes, but I feel like there are some indiscretions or nuances throughout the recordings that I've loved about old albums, you know, listening to Hendrix and listening to Zeppelin or you know, guys that have kind of, Rolling Stones is a great example of that too. It's just, you feel like you are where they are, because it just feels good to listen to as well.
Well, I think you nailed it. I mean, it's the human aspect of making music is what draws us together in the first place. It's like,
and what draws us in with a lot of music that we like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely been a theme of since we've started making music together, of trying to keep it raw and natural feeling, because also that's what I think we're drawn to as well. Not that we don't like different types of music, but ultimately what's very visceral and instinctive is what really catches me, for sure. And you know, for the, I liked what you said. It's like, a lot of people produce music and want it to sound absolutely perfect because you can, and it's not because you can that you should. And I think that's a big theme for us. Like you said, yeah, there are some mistakes here and there, some, you know, some things that don't sound quite perfect, but ultimately listening back, we're like, the vibe and the heart of the song is there. And if we really go back and try to just get that little piece, or just like go punch in those two bars, or it's like, I feel like we might end up losing a bit of the magic of the song, because a lot of it is recorded live off the floor. For Free Living, we actually went into the studio for 4 days, and it was actually more of a practice space. So this large room where we set up drums and the whole guitar rig, and, you know, did some of the tracking together and then overdubbing. But like, you know, I was recording vocals in the room with everybody around, you know, me. There's no booth, there's no, so there's also a feeling of togetherness while you're making it as well, which I thought was cool. And I guess you know, at least for me, when I'm listening, you can kind of hear that. It's like, yeah, like we made that in one room all together, you know?
Being a two piece, it's the live energy that I think is what is magical in this band. And getting that on tape is super hard. Mm. And I think like I can barely listen to Custom Cream because I'm like, oh, that's not what it sounded like.
Mm-hmm. Or not what it should have sounded like. Or yeah. Not what it sounds like when we play it today,
when we play it. Like, I didn't play these songs for like 3 years. And the other day, just off of muscle memory, I'm like, yo, let's play this song. And it just sounded like a ton of bricks. It was like crazy.
But it's also from, you know, playing the last, you know, that's 3 years ago.
But we fought through to get to a point where with Out of Controller Live, we were like, oh, we got the sound that was like, oh shit, okay, that live sound. But how do you get that live? How do you bottle up that dragon? And the thing is, you don't bottle it up. You just need to really like zone in on what it is that you're going to do, what makes it special. And then Free Living, renting out that space, and we produced it by ourselves, where again, we're back with that echo chamber, but it was a survival thing. It was just like run and gun. So we got there, and you know your parts. You know, it's like you know what you got to do, and you execute. So, I mean, I think that high stress situation, pressure situation, I think is also what kind of pushes the band. But as I'm growing older now and wiser, I'm realizing that sometimes can stifle exploration.
Mm-hmm. Mm, right.
But at the same time, how the fuck are you supposed to explore when you're trying to survive? There's no money coming in, kids, friendships, you know, evolution of what's going to happen. Everyone's like, well, are you going to stop making music, or are you going to get another job? And you're like, I don't fucking know. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Even if I wanted to. Yeah. I don't know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But so, I mean, that's also part of why, you know, ultimately we kept it raw and like everything was tracked and done in 4 days. And, you know, I mean, it's part of the sound. It's also part of the mentality and part of the work ethic of like run and gun. We got to get this done, or we got to do this. And eventually down the line, we're definitely open to exploring more or taking more time or, you know, like tracking something, demoing something, and then coming back to it and being like, okay, that sounds sick, but is there something else we could do on top? Is there something else that we could do differently? And when you're tracking a whole record in 4 days, or Out of Controller was done in 2 days, you don't give yourself enough time to do that sort of exploring.
2 days. I mean, sometimes it's like, oh, what are you trying? But it's like, you get there, you have to set up the gear, tune, make sure everything's all right, sound check, and then boom, record all drums, all guitars, all vocals in 2 days. Like we would leave the studio just absolutely burnt but stoked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's just the first part, right? Or did you guys like, that's just the recording part. Did you guys
that's just the recording.
And you kind of take your time taking into mixing and mastering if you can.
The mentality there is that there's a lot in the music industry, people will try to get you with owning your masters and owning your publishing. And I was like, well, if I can make a record in 2 days and it cost me $1,000 a day, let's say, for studio, then I can make a full record for $2,000 and then go see a mix engineer and be like, okay, can you do this? And so I can make a record for roughly $6,000. That's me, us, versus you owning my record and therefore owning my idea. I'm like, that doesn't sit well with me. Like, we put in all this work, and because we're able to do it efficiently and quickly, why aren't we the ones benefiting from this? And not even monetarily, but then having to be told no about certain things. And again, it's not that we're picky. It's more like we both come from business backgrounds. We both went to university in business. And it's like, okay, there's the artistry part of being a musician, but if you want to make it, you have to understand the business aspect of it. So when you start asking questions and shit gets nebulous, you're like, well, no, like, there's an answer to this. And if you're lying to me, then we're going to have a problem.
Yeah. And you're going to find out for sure. Well, that's interesting to know about the business side of things. Yeah.
And they did.
And they did. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and I guess it's all dependent on situation too, right? I mean, some people have $6,000. Some people, if they're offered it, that's what they want to take. And, you know, where are you at? But I think ultimately you're right. Like, if you can own it, that's 100% the way that you're going to go. And you know, these days to do it yourself is definitely possible. It's way more possible than it was 10 years ago. I guess maybe 10 years ago wasn't that long ago anymore. In the music world and the digital world. So, I mean, it's a great point. I mean, to know now, yeah, again, the business side of things, I'd love to just kind of transition into thinking about that once the album is ready and, you know, the whole idea of release day to talk about that, the release strategy. Did that play, like, I'm interested then to know with the kind of like that mindset of business mindset, did that play into, does it help? Was it beneficial in determining how you guys were going to go about releasing this? Were you a little more methodical in terms of picking a day and the planning and things leading up to that?
I think, again, with the free living, it's like, okay, so it's one thing to want to own your masters, but then the real question is, what do you do with them?
Right.
How do you make those masters be worth anything? Mm-hmm. So I think, again, with the run and gun, I think we did a good job. There's a lot of things I realize I could have done differently, but you don't know until you do it. And I think that that's another founding aspect of the band. It's like, if you don't know until you do it, then if you're always waiting for perfection, then nothing's going to get done. And I'm realizing, especially in these last couple of weeks, I wrote down our discography, which is like roughly 50 songs released or on Bandcamp or whatever. And there's like 50 other songs that have never been touched. And I'm like, how do you harness that power and that energy and release it intelligently? And mm-hmm. we're definitely learning. It's one yeah. thing to want to be free, but it's another thing to know what to do with that freedom. So the way it was set up is there's a lot of bigger acts that, especially in when you get like to September, October, November, I don't know if you've noticed, but October is so much going on, so many releases. And so we
know Taylor Swift's going to release an album in October.
Yeah.
All right. So just don't
Drake,
even touch.
You know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers have put out two double albums. Like, you can't compete with that. And no. That's a bit demoralizing at times. Because it's like you're not even a drop in the ocean with 100,000 songs being uploaded to Spotify. So it's tough to, again, put on the marketing hat or the business hat and put aside the artist hat, because it's tough to kind of promote yourself. You know, we both come from sports where it's more of a meritocracy. Like, if you play a good game, you're going to hear about it. But if you write a good record and you don't talk about it, no one gives a shit. So it's hard to kind of learn to, you don't want to be boastful. You want to be humble, but at the same time, you want to flex. You need to flex or else you'll die.
100,000 songs. What is it? A day? A week now?
I think it's a day.
Uploaded.
Is it a day?
Yeah. A day.
Is that a stat?
Yeah.
That's as we speak, as we record, as this is happening, as you're listening to this, I don't even want to do the math. I'm not good at math on the minutes or seconds that songs are being uploaded, but that's what's happening. And I guess I can't sympathize because I'm not an artist. I'm not doing this, but with you know, artists that I speak to, I mean, it's kind of that's the thing, and it's tough. How do you talk about it without being boastful, but just being creative with it? And honestly, I think you guys are doing that, whether, you know, whatever it is, what my opinion means, but I feel like, you know, when you see stuff from you guys, you see your videos, you see, you know, the flamingos pink on the back of a jacket, you see, like, there are a lot of things that you guys are doing, and there's a lot that surround you guys. And I think sound is most important. People can listen to it and maybe chalk it up to they sound like, but to me, that's not the case. And if it's not to me, there's no way it is to everybody else either. So, guys, awesome. Free Living is the album. Go listen to it and the other albums. Custom Cream, Out of Controller. It's great stuff. Absolutely love putting it on. Jules,
you know, streams never fucking put a dime.
Oh yeah,
in my pocket. So buy a record.
Buy
a record. We've got them. These are the test presses.
Oh, wicked. Oh, wicked. Amazing. What about merch? You guys got shirts? You got any shirts or?
Turns out we're sold out. We're making more.
You're making more.
That's a good thing to be sold out. But
yeah.
It is, yeah. But I mean, again, if you don't know the Flamingos Pink, go check out their brand. Go check out their stuff. You're going to want a piece of their merch. Jules Sash, thanks a ton for joining me on the Release Day Series podcast.
Oh, thank you for having us.
You can discover more podcast episodes as well as our limited video series on our website, www.releasedayseries.com. And if you'd like to support the show, we've added that option to the website as well. Send us $1, $3, $5, whatever you'd like. Any support helps. But most importantly, we appreciate you listening and sharing the podcast.